You were inquiring about whether or not University Extension still does all of these types of programs that I mentioned that I was involved with in the years that I was there. And the answer is no. Some of the programs exist, but this kind of program that related to Wisconsin and the surrounding area isn't there. That was sort of something that I dreamed up. And when I left, I was not replaced by a person who continued to do those things. What had happened in the meantime, this statewide extension had, in effect, had its feathers plucked. And the various campuses in the system began to take on outreach responsibilities. And they did not look as seriously at statewide extension or the possibility of the statewide extension person that existed in Madison to help them or to do things for them. So now it's campus by campus, and the Madison campus Division of Outreach and so on, that was part of it. And that came in the mid-80s. So it's no longer. The wonderful thing is that TV and radio is still there, and that's part of University Extension. And I think that all of this work has been tremendously affected also by innovation in the media and ways of delivering information that are less costly. So it's a different world now. That world that I was in was gone.
I was wondering if you have you been following this, well, I imagine you have, this work that's being done on this Great Lakes is it a compact where the
Yes.
various states in Canada are
Very
trying to come
definitely.
together? Would you
Very
talk a
definitely.
little bit about that? I just, are you optimistic that something good will
I
come
yeah,
out of it?
I th It seems to, I was just delighted when I read the newspaper the other day and found that Wisconsin at last had signed on. There has been over, oh my golly, this business of trying to get cooperation goes way back into the 19th century. And there was an effort to develop cooperation in the 1890s when people began to realize, in the fisheries, when people began to realize that the fisheries were simply being totally ruined by uncontrolled exploitation of the fish population, uncontrolled harvests and so on. The Canadians tried to control, but they're right next door to the Americans who aren't trying to control, and the fishermen just go anywhere on the lake, and the American fishermen invaded the Canadian waters and so on and so on. And finally, the Canadians realized that their controls were just not especially effective, and they don't have effective controls at the present time. So the effort was in the 90s to get cooperation at the national levels by treaty. And there was a very important commission that was established by National Commission to effect such a possibility. And they made an elaborate study, great field trips all around the shared waters, and gathering of information. And that was to be the basis, hopefully, of some kind of treaty and agreement to the two countries. It flopped. This effort was tried again early in the 20th century. It was tried again in the 1930s. We never got cooperation until we had this invasion of the sea lamprey into the lakes in the 1930s and 40s. And then the two countries did cooperate in trying to control that. But the fact that these natural areas are politically divided presents just an enormous blockade to getting anything done. And the commercial interests in general have opposed any kind of regulation. And they keep talking, they're always talking about states' rights and the sovereignty of the state. And this is going to be invaded and so on. Well, it's just taken an incredible amount of work to get this particular agreement into shape where it has a chance of being approved by the various parties. And it's all in terms of water diversion, which is a great issue. And, you know, we're moving slowly forward. The Canadians signed on right away. And then I think we've got yet, I think it's New York. Is it New York and Pennsylvania and Michigan? Or has Michigan signed on in the meantime? I'd have to just check on that. But most of the states have now signed on to this. And it's going to be a matter of you can't divert water from the lakes and not return it if some party, except the Canadians, they don't get this, except in the states, mm-hmm. unless all the states agree. Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, a check on that aspect of the degradation of the lakes. Mm-hmm. But the degradation of the lakes is a very serious problem. And it's one reason I wrote that book. I hoped that sort of by back door, I could get people intensely interested in a lake and see just how important it has been and is and will be and ought to be protected.
Well, and we hear about all of these water problems around the other parts of the country. I mean, mm-hmm. you'd think that would urge people to pay attention to what mm-hmm. we have here mm-hmm. and that we want to mm-hmm. keep it.
Mm-hmm. And there was even some entrepreneur in Canada who, within the last couple of decades, decided the thing to do was to ship water out of Lake Superior overseas. The Canadians squashed that one.
Good. Yeah. Well, I'm very glad that you wrote that book, too.
I was just going to say, and I think, and I really emphasize the important role of the Native Americans in that, mm-hmm. and the Native North Americans, because the Canadian divided as it is. They have been extremely helpful with the efforts to retain the quality of the lakes, and the spearfishing thing, in essence, ended up accelerating the efforts of the Ojibwa to help with care of the lakes and care of the lake's fish population instead of decimating it.
And that's not a problem anymore, right? I mean, you don't read about any so much about the conflicts between the fishermen up on in a lot of these areas.
A lot of them aren't there. That's the truth. The fish are gone. It's a sad truth.
It's not, okay. So it's only an issue. It's not an issue because there's no fish.
Well, just take, for example, the Red Cliff mm-hmm. Reservation, which is up there. You're getting up toward the Apostle Islands that's fair to say. Well, anyway, the Red Cliff Reservation people are currently working very hard to get the high command in Washington in the military to help them do something about all of this waste, these waste products, the very, very lethal waste products that were dumped into Lake Superior, not too far from the water intake for the city of Superior. And they know that this is affecting, you know, the fish population. And they depend on the fish as a part of their livelihood. They're working on hot issues like that. They don't back away from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what they've concluded is, well, if you can't beat them, join them. Figure out how these things work and get your legal arm to work on some of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very fine. And there is an organization of the Ojibwe of Lake Superior, at least on the, I don't think it includes the Canadians, so I think the American Ojibwe are united in an organization to protect the lake.
Are you a fisher?
No.
I just wondered, after all of that research, if you ever were, or you, and stopped, or
be afraid to eat them. You know, the truth is, there's just such high mercury levels in the fish, and it's true, sadly enough, for every lake in the state of Wisconsin, everyone. And we're kind of out of control with these matters, and need to get in control, and people. I don't think people just, it seems to be hard to get people excited until something terrible happens. For instance, reserve mining on Lake Superior in the 1980s and 90s was refining taconite ore on the shore of Lake Superior. They were refining it and putting all the waste products in the lake. I talk rather considerably about this in the Lake Superior book. And it was found by those down at Duluth that there were asbestos tailings in the water, and that it was being taken into the city water supply, and that people were drinking water that had this substance in it, which is considered a carcinogenic. And that particular fight was one of these big ones that got people all stirred up. The other one was that in the early 70s, and it happened about the same time, when the river down on the southern shore of Lake Erie caught on fire.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, an incident, the river's on fire, there's asbestos in the water, drinking water. Then people, you know, and the truth is that the spoliation of the lakes is something that goes way, way, way back. You can find the beginning of it in the fur trade, for heaven's sake, with the decimation of the beaver population and this great inroad upon the hydrography because of the drying up of the wetlands that the beaver created with their beaver dams. So it builds over the years. Mm-hmm. And
now, when did you first have your home up by Minocqua?
1968.
Have you seen a lot of changes up there in 40 years?
Well, I'm sorry to say it's been delzified. Up the city of Minocqua, we are not in the city. We're out in the woods on a lake that is a lake that's spring-fed and contained. It's not in a chain. And the water is tested, and DNR is taking very, very good care of the lake. It's been tested recently, and things are good, all things considered. And people, you know, there have been wonderful things have happened in terms of handling sewage. And the kind of septic tanks that you have, and the septic tanks inspection. Mm-hmm. And every 2 years, you know, you have to have such and so done, and this recorded with, properly recorded with DNR officials. Mm-hmm. So I think people, but there are still foolish people who are, they come there and they decide, we got to have a lawn. And so they want to cut down the trees and plant the grass and pour on the fertilizer and so on and so on. I think that, you know, there's some slow progress, and people are beginning to realize that this isn't the way to go if you want to keep your lake in good shape. But I think Americans seem to be pretty slow learners on these environmental matters.
Until there's a catastrophe.
Yeah, another catastrophe, and then they're all ready to reform, and then that dies down and slump back again. And it's very difficult to regulate intelligently and see that the regulations stay in place, that they're not slowly eroded. There's always a conflict between economic interests and interests in preserving the natural environment. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly the case with reserve mining. Huge industry, and they just fought like tigers to keep dumping these taconite tailings into Lake Superior. Mm-hmm. And it took about 10 years in the court to make sure that they established a place to put them on land. I'm not just sure how effective that's going to be over time, because, you know, there's groundwater. Groundwater gets in the lake. But there are not easy solutions, and it's kind of constant vigilance, and people aren't too keen about constant vigilance.
Very true. Well, I don't have any other questions, but I don't want to turn this off. If there's anything else that you want to say.
I don't think so. I think that summarizes it.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate this. This was an excellent interview. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. It was my pleasure.